I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, I was impressed by many of the speeches at this year's political conventions. It's the subtext that's getting on my nerves. I'll tell you what I mean in just a few minutes. But first, from time to time, we delve into the pages of the Washington Post Sunday magazine for interesting stories about the way we live now. This weekend, it's a new twist on the very oldest kind of tourism. Before Caribbean cruises and Club Med, before wealthy Europeans took their grand tours of the continent, people took religious journeys, pilgrimages to holy sites that mattered to their faith. Peter Manceau, the editor of Search magazine, recently undertook a modern-day pilgrimage. He went to Turkey with a group that organizes faith travels, and he wrote about the experience in this weekend's Post magazine. He's with us now. Also with us is Rick Watts. He teaches the New Testament at Regent College in Vancouver. He was a guide on the trip. And we also welcome Kevin Wright, the executive director of the World Religious Travel Association. I welcome you all. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Very nice to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, great. Peter, I'm going to start with you. Your trip to Turkey was something part of something called the Seven Churches Experience. What is that?
Yes, I was actually there. I was there already when I learned about the Seven Churches Experiences. I was there researching a novel. It's called Songs for the Butcher's Daughter. It's just out now, if you don't mind me saying so. And it is very much a book about spiritual questing and being in foreign lands and finding religious truths. So there I was in Turkey, and I found out about this group, Ultimate Journeys, a travel group out of Seattle. And they had something called the Seven Churches Experience, which travels to seven sites mentioned in the last book of the Christian Bible, the Apocalypse of St. John. And they visit these places, these seven cities in Turkey, as a way of relearning the history of their faith.
Rick, are people surprised to hear about the importance of these sites to the Christian story? And why do you think it's important for people to go to places like this as opposed to just read about them?
Yeah, well, I think actually one of the problems that our Western culture faces in some ways is that we reduce these things just to ideas. And people are much more than that. So there's something about the ambience, there's something about standing in this place where history actually happened, that it's history that changes the world in many ways, not kind of a rarefied philosophy or perhaps even scientific development. So to take them back to a place like this and to point out what those cities were like and how these early Christian communities were concerned with transformation, I think for many people helps them to get a much richer idea of what this being Christian thing is all about.
Well, can they really, though, go back to the second century? I mean, everybody's got cell phones and cars and, you know, designer jeans
right.
And all the stuff that we have. Can you really take people back to the second century?
It'd be great if we had Doctor Who's TARDIS, right? But, of course, that's impossible. This is the closest thing we can do. And I think to stand in the streets, for example, often when there's crowds of tourists around, it gives a really good impression of just how crowded those places were. People are jostling one another, bumping up against one another. So all of that just helps. You're absolutely right. We can't completely replicate the experience, but we can give them something of a sense, I think.
Kevin, you had one of the biggest companies in the faith tourism industry. Now, some faiths, like Islam, expects that its believers will take a journey at some point to Mecca if they are able to do so. Christianity doesn't make that kind of requirement. So why do people want to go? And who does want to go?
Yeah, it's virtually all faiths have a tradition of traveling and traveling to a destination to experience their faith. Not only they can experience it from, you know, spiritually, socially, emotionally, and also physically. So it's just a very long tradition that you've had. And to this day, it's branching off where it's not only traveling to the religious destination itself, but just traveling together in fellowship. So that's why you're seeing like faith-based cruising, even faith-based African safaris.
Is part of it to have a travel experience that doesn't compromise one's values? Is that part of it? Or, I mean, is part of it the opening up, or is part of it the closing off?
Well, again, the heart of it usually is to experience your faith and to experience it in a much fuller way. What we're seeing in more modern days is still faith is the focus of their journey, but they really very much enjoy it being balanced by traditional sightseeing and that traditional vacation experience as well.
Peter, in your article, you write that you expected people on this tour to be, forgive us, wild-eyed zealots, but they weren't that way.
They were not that way at all, and I think that because of the tour's specific focus on the seven cities of Revelation, I did perhaps have in mind this idea of the Left Behind series of novels, these apocalyptic Christian novels that focus on the end times. And so I had in my mind that that might be the type of people who I would find taking these trips, I found exactly the opposite. They were just well-meaning, well-educated, and curious people who wanted to learn more about the history of their faith, and they thought there was no better way to do that than to go to these places and see it.
Peter, you also say that for many people, all travel, especially overseas, is about revelation with a small r. You're expecting to be changed. Did you go on this trip expecting to be changed? Big R revelation.
I think that whenever we buy a plane ticket, there's something just in the transaction and in the act of going someplace new that we do hope for this world-changing, life-changing experience. And very often we don't find that. We find that, there's a Starbucks in Istanbul. We find a lot of the same things.
I have no problem with that, just letting you know.
Especially now we find so much of our common culture wherever we go in the world that it's always a matter of trying to get off the beaten path to find those experiences. So I certainly look for those things when I travel.
I wanted to ask Rick and Kevin, I want to ask you the same thing. Are people going on these trips expecting to be transformed? And are they ever disappointed if they aren't? Rick, what about you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope so. That's one of the things that we aim to do is to, personally, I try to get people away from this idea that God is the moral policeman of the universe. I think that just confines people's lives. It puts boundaries up. I try to say to them, no, this is about life. It's about bringing life to other people. So hopefully that's what they experience. And I think most of the people I've spoken to do feel that. But, we're human beings. We don't always get the kinds of things we'd like to. And so I guess some people are a bit frustrated sometimes, but mostly not, I suspect.
Kevin, what about you? I mean, this is a multi-million-dollar industry. You deal with, thousands of tourists. But does anyone ever feel shortchanged if they don't find themselves having some profound experience?
Yeah, I'm sure in every crowd you're going to have some of that. But the vast majority, when you talk to a person who has gone on a pilgrimage trip or traveled with their respective faith community, you'll usually find the vast majority want to repeat that travel experience because it really did have a profound effect. And in many cases, you do find people saying that was a turning point in their life.
If you're just tuning in, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Rick Watts, Kevin Wright, and Peter Manceau about religious tourism, specifically a trip Peter recently took to Turkey, which was guided by Rick Watts. Peter, you point out, though, that Turkey is a Muslim country. It's obviously engaged in this vigorous debate about the extent to which its identity should be Muslim. It is a Muslim country. But you also point out that a lot of the folks on these tours really don't experience Islam at all, except for one stop to the Blue Mosque. Do you find that strange, given that this is one of the world's great and dominant religions?
Well, I do find it strange, but I also find it an opportunity for a great surprise to travelers who go thinking that they're going to be learning about Christian history, and they may get a surprising lesson in the Islamic present. They learn about what it is to be in a Muslim country and to travel through a Muslim country looking for Christian history. And more importantly, most importantly, I think they learn about the ways the two religions have interacted through the centuries and to learn that they are not so far apart in terms of their history and their development. And I think that's a terrific lesson to learn.
Rick, speaking of lessons, how do you teach that? How do you talk about Islam in the context of this journey?
Well, I think actually an example might be better. We were at Sardis, which is one of the great historic Greek cities, actually, of the ancient world. And while we were there, we had several busloads of what appeared to be young women from a fairly conservative Islamic school. They had their scarves on, etc. And they gathered around and watched what we were doing. And I basically said, look, let's stop this. Let's just chat to these people. And so we spent probably an hour and a half chatting to them, taking photos together, communicating, about the kinds of things that interested us. And I think that's a much more effective way of doing this. In terms of history, we also have a Turkish guide, and we encourage him to talk about his view of how the Turkish world and the Christian world have engaged. And the final thing I'd say is that we tell these people, look, we're visitors here, so we're not going to do any public religious activity. We wouldn't like that in our kind of backyards. We won't do it in theirs. We're going to respect them, dress codes, etc. So be sensitive. Be aware that there are, two major religions, and the thing that matters most is our humanity. And to respect people, show them dignity, I think, or respect their dignity.
There's a funny scene in the article where people are visiting the Blue Mosque, and there's There's some differences in attire that have to be mediated. Tell us about that, Rick.
Well, that's always a bit of a surprise for people who are not quite used to it. But again, that's
the
one of the things we try to
encourage
them to.
The shorts are a no-go.
Exactly, right? Make
Even
sure you've got headscarves on. Yeah, exactly.
Even for the men.
Mind you, yeah, those legs are not particularly great anyway, right?
I'm not going there.
Good.
Kevin, what about the whole question of, forgive me, for security? I know that some of these places are parts of the world that have experienced sectarian and political violence. Are your visitors concerned about that? And are there any special steps that you take to address these questions? As part of just being sort of modest and polite and letting people understand the rules of the road part of that? Are there any other steps that are necessary?
Well, the biggest thing is the perception. As Americans, most of us do have a perception that when you travel abroad to Turkey, Israel, that you're going to run into problems because what we see and hear every night on the news. But it's actually just the opposite. Countries like Turkey, Israel, Egypt, the governments take very good care of protecting the tourism industry. And, of course, the people themselves. I mean, they're the local people are the ones that run the hotels, the transportations, the local guides. So they're very protective of the industry, and it is very safe. And, we're talking about Turkey here, but just take Israel. This year, they're having record numbers of visitors, 2.8 million, yet if you were to ask the typical American, they would think, oh, I think there's problems over in Israel. I maybe shouldn't go there this year. So the biggest issue is perception. Once you go there, and I'm sure Peter can attest to this, once you go there, everything is just so hospitable.
Okay. Peter, final question to you is, did you have any small R or big R revelations on this trip? Was there anything that you are very well traveled, but is there something that you discovered on this trip that perhaps you were not expecting?
The most wonderful moment that happened for me is actually when I left the tour group behind, and I rented a car and I drove to the Seven Cities of Revelation myself. And along the way, I happened to be at a stoplight in the middle of the desert, what seemed like a desert to me, and I picked up five Turkish school teachers who had missed their bus and they needed to get to the next town. And we maybe had five words of English we could share together, but just in the course of being in the car crowded into my Ford Festiva, we managed to communicate, and we managed to pass along something of what was important to us, and they shared with me what it was like to live there. And that was the real revelation to me, just that immediate human contact.
Rick, only a minute left, but same you, you've been there many, many times. Were there any small R or big R revelations for you?
Yeah, the same kind of thing. It's at the level of our common humanity. We talk about that a lot, but until you actually experience it and take the time to be vulnerable and open with people, it's just a concept. So that for me has been very rich as well. But also, just again, the historicity of all of this, that this strange story really did change the world in all kinds of extraordinary ways. And it's good to remind people of its essential roots. It's about caring for people fundamentally, I think.
The piece is titled Revelation Road. If you want to read it in its entirety, we will have a link on our website. The author, Peter Manso, is also in his spare time, the editor of Search Magazine. He was kind enough to join us here in our Washington studios. Rick Watts is a professor at Regent's University in Vancouver. He joined us from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in British Columbia. And Kevin Wright is the executive director of the World Religious Travel Association. He joined us from KCFR in Denver, Colorado. And I thank you all so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.